Hi everyone, welcome along to Love's Kitchen and Love's Be Online. Great to have you here. So let's begin our class as we normally do. We begin by setting our motivation, taking refuge together, and then enhancing that motivation as bodhicitta. We'll say a few prayers and then I'll begin the class, and during the class of course we can pause and ask different questions if you like. So please get just adjust the posture so your back is straight. You want to have your shoulders relaxed. And your head should be sort of evenly balanced on your neck. And your eyes, you can keep them fully open, half closed, or completely closed, whatever suits you. So once you are sitting comfortably, let the body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself, relax into awareness. Imagine the nature of the ground beneath you is made of starry sapphire light, which is very, very soft. And the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. And directly in front of you, about the level of your eyebrows, appears a throne held up by 8 white stone lions. And on the seat of that throne, there are bushes of a lotus and a sun and moon lying flat. And sitting on that flat moon cushion is the Buddha Shakyamuni. He's golden in colour, he wears the 3 robes of the monk. His right hand is touching the earth, his left hand is holding the begging bowl. He is surrounded by an assembly of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, deities and other enlightened beings. You are sitting beneath the Buddha, and you are surrounded by all sentient beings. These sentient beings include your parents. So your mother is sitting on the left, your father on the right. Close friends and family are behind you. Difficult people are directly in front of you, and strangers surround these groups of people. And I'll just take a moment to consider how fortunate you are to still be alive today. There are many more causes of death than there are for life. And though we shall all die, none of us know when. And every minute that we sit here, over 100 people die. So while we are alive, we have the leisure and opportunity to attain any spiritual goal that we set for ourselves. But we need to act quickly. Things are not quite right. And this world does not exist as it seems to. Nevertheless, we have met a spiritual friend. And this spiritual friend of ours is leading us in the safe directions of the 3 rare sublimates. The Buddha, his teacher or doctor, the teachings as medicine, and the enlightened community, the people who accompany us or the nurses. Now, to make our practice as purely as possible, I'd like you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. And your body is made like a bubble of rainbow light that you can see clean through. And you're holding in your hands a Dorje and a bell. The bell is in your left hand, symbolizing wisdom, realizing emptiness. And the dojo is in your right hand, symbolizing the skillful means of bodhicitta. We're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. And you want to leave all the thinking beings who surround you, the parents, their family, difficult people and friends. But lead them all towards the safe direction, in the safe direction of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And so you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this wish of ours, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. These lights and nectars, they purify negative karmas and obstructions. They increase your health and lifespan, your virtues and realizations. So it cleanses with wisdom, it fortifies with compassionate love. Recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. These being love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Decide to develop these yourself. And to establish all beings in these four immeasurable states. To affirm this wish of yours, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the vice of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this mobilized wish, think that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. And negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Their health and lifespan, virtues and realizations are increased. So you relax and exhale. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for accumulating merit, and they appear. And you say, and then your gaze, wherever may I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mental. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the meritable home of ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So we've purified our body, speech, and mind somewhat, and we've accumulated the merit of having done so. So just to stop us corrupting that through self-grasping, imagine your body, speech, and mind, your enjoyments, everything you hold dear, the universe itself, are utterly transformed through wisdom, realizing emptiness, and reappear as a wonderful pure land whereby you can give teachings to others in the future. And this land you offer to the Buddha and his entourage. You say, this ground, anointed with perfumes, birds, flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field rock. May all living beings enjoy this pure earth. When the Buddha has accepted your offering, he smiles at you with delight, and you look up into his eyes. And looking into the eyes of the Buddha, you recollect your desire to be free from suffering and its causes. We wish to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. And the correct view that all phenomena lack true existence, but do dependently arise. We aspire to be a Buddha, a fully awakened being. So induced by your wishes and prayers, it emerges from the heart of the Buddha, the second figure who absorbs into you. And your form clearly becomes that of a Guru Buddha. From your heart, life rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you. And each of them is placed in the state of the Guru Buddha. So you and all beings are now seen to be fully awakened, enlightened beings, Buddhas. And so from the heart of yourself, all beings, is a mantra garland reflecting in the Buddha. You can hear it resonating in space. And you join in, saying, Tayata Omri Mahamre Soha, Tayata Omri Mahamre Soha, Tayata Omri Mahamre Soha. I think now the two purposes have been achieved. You've accomplished your own awakening and you've helped everyone else do the same. Then, I recognize that this meditation is one of imagination. Although this enlightenment hasn't actually taken place, we've imprinted the mind with the potential for it to take place. I think you've done something meaningful with this evening. Again, a firm wish to become awakened for the benefit of others. And breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. And get your eyes back open. And move your body in whichever way you'd like to, so you feel quite comfortable in your seat. Okay, so last week, we looked at what meditation is. Can anybody recommend, can anybody remember what meditation is? What are we doing? Meditation is we're cultivating or becoming familiar with a mental property. Why do we meditate? To basically just change the mind into positive states of mind. And last one, we did a breath meditation. This week, we're looking at the posture, or we're looking at the body and the way we prepare the body for practice. And these are some of the books I've been using. So Commit to Sit With Less Pain and the Posture of Meditation are really in-depth books looking at the posture of sitting and why you sit that way and what can be produced in dependence upon your posture. Walking Through Walls, it was a really good book. It really talks about the practice of calm abiding and the different states you can experience once you reach the state of calm abiding. Steps on the Path to Enlightenment has quite an in-depth section here for preparing the body to meditate. So let's look at the the posture. So I've got 5 pictures here, but basically just sort of 4 ways you meditate. In terms of the purpose for the posture, So you sit like this so you can be relaxed and have the body and mind stable and the mind be vivid. And there are four postures. As you can see here, you can meditate lying down. This picture here, the person's lying down on the right side and they'll have their nostril on the right nostril blocked off like that. Now the Buddha was supposed to die in this posture, it's called the lying posture. It's sleeping posture. So if you go to probably one of the last things you do at night when you go to sleep is to lie on that posture, put your arm over there, pop your nostril, and breathe. There are standing meditations. This is the second one there, the fellow in the grey shorts and t-shirt. So there are different ways you can stand too, and it really does make a difference to your meditation. You should try this out, try the difference between sitting, lying down, and standing. The thing that I like about standing meditations is that you can relax really quickly, because you can just actually stand there and tighten everything up pretty quickly. Just get your hands like this, tighten with the other, and just let it go. Your body sort of drops, and you can still crook in your knees, and you know, that's the right posture. And you can just stand there like that, keep your eyes open, and when you breathe, you get a really good movement of the air going right down to your tummy, and you feel it all. So you're very present. So the danger of sitting here like this and then closing your eyes is that you lose presence, and you can fall asleep very easily or become very dull-minded. That's not going to happen when you're standing. Also, you say you don't need to have your eyes wide like this, only but you can just sort of look down at the floor like that, or just leave them relaxed. It's up to you. So the walking, sorry, the sitting ones which we're all familiar with. We'll go into that in a bit more depth shortly. The other, of course, is walking meditation. So there are particular ways of walking, and these are discussed in the book. So you've got to be sort of quite careful and consider about how you place your feet. The posture should support the mind and not torture the body. So if you're ever feeling really sore in the way you're sitting, change your posture. You'll never be able to meditate with any sort of depth or even stability if you keep thinking about the pain you're going through. So comfort is probably better for us. Okay. So there's four postures. The idea is the posture should be a relaxed state, support relaxation, stability. So the other thing also about lying down, it's not here or something, you can also lie down on your back, which I'll show you later on. And that's terrific because your back can actually be straight then. You know, if you put a cushion underneath your legs and you lie down, your back is supported by the floor and not by space itself. So anybody knows if you've been sitting for a while, you'll start to go down like this, right? Then you start moving all over the place, and this is not really conducive for meditation. So now what to sit on is our next one. So we have these different types of seats and cushions. So everybody is sitting on a cushion here. And they've got different names. So you can see it's what's called the full lotus, which is really what they call a Vajra posture. That's when your left foot is up on your right thigh and your right foot is up on your left thigh. You've got that crossed over, what the Tibetan Buddhists call a Vajra. So when it's not like that, then it's called the lotus or half lotus. And so that's probably what most of us could do. Or if not, we just do like a half lotus. We just put one leg up and another one underneath. You can also see it, it's not on the other side, close to the Burmese. That's quite straightforward too. You just, like you're sitting on the cushion, your legs are not crossed, but they're sort of like that. And they're just out in front of you. That's one of the ways of sitting. Another is, so if you're kneeling, you can sit. You can get your cushion in, so you can sit on and have your legs go out each side of it.
Cushion or
just,
kneel?
I think, I don't know, can you guys see how these people are sitting here? The
Yeah.
legs alongside them
Yes.
and not in front of them. Yeah, that's okay. Thank you. But yeah, so you might get a, sorry, can you just hold that up just for a moment? Yeah, so this seat here, as you can see, you can put your legs underneath it, or you can put your legs alongside it, or you can put your legs in front of it. Yeah, so you can raise and put it out. Thank you. And of course, there's also sitting on a chair. Now, if you, we don't, we're not doing it here, but I have done it before, where I've grabbed those these tables on the side here, on the side of the room, and pulled them down and stuck them underneath the back legs of the chair. But that way you get the chair to tilt up like this, so the back is raised. You get a little angle in the seat. If you've got something at home, a 4x2, a piece of wood, this is what you can do. Just lift up the back legs, and you'll find that you just, you go forward a little, but it's natural. You know, you sort of have all this great support of the seat being raised. Otherwise, like here, I often sit and you end up putting cushions on the chair. You know, so this is what you have to do. You just got to find a comfortable way to sit. What happens, of course, while you're sitting over time, you get tired. And your shoulders will hurt, your neck will hurt, your lower back will hurt, your thighs will hurt, your knees will hurt, your ankles hurt. Sometimes you get what they call a dead leg. So I've had stories of people sitting up here for a while, chatting away, everything's fine. Then they get up and they fall over and break their ankle, or in one case, it's broke one of his leg. It's gone to sleep and they haven't noticed. Doesn't say much about mindfulness, does it? Oftentimes you feel you get the pins and needles in your feet, so you get some idea, and that's why it's often best to sit here for a while and rub your feet or rub your legs before you put them on the floor. You know? But the seats themselves. Now, you know, we've got a number of seats here. We've got lots of cushions here, that little chair that Madonna lifted up. You can see, like this in the picture here, it's got three different levels. When I was up at CI just recently, I had one of these, and then I bought a little blow-up cushion. So I like them; they're very easy to carry. You can fold them in half, and you just blow them up. And what's nice about them is that they've got movement in them. Now, so I just threw my blow-up little cushion on this. I've got the right height. Put my legs underneath it, and you get a little bit of secret sort of move as you move. And as you can see, this thing's called futons here. They're round seats you can put on, like up the back of the. Probably also those big yoga rolls. They're nice to sit on. If you sit on and put your legs on either side, they're certainly really good and firm. They're also nice to sit on if you just sit and sort of get your legs to drop beneath them. Unless you're just sitting correctly, you need to play around with this idea here. So you can see how this is like a triangle there. Okay, and this is what you want to try and do when you sit. It's like you sit and you want to run your nose down through your navel. Right, so it's in line. As you can see, like here, it comes up, down, and then out to your two knees and back up. And so you're, there's land room meditations, meaning sort of analytical meditations on the stages of the path. In our tradition, it's said the listener and the eyes should be looking back straight, shoulders relaxed. And then your eyes are like sort of looking down the nose. You don't actually see that you should, the eyes should be slightly open. And you just see the tip of your nose. And then you close your eyes a little bit more, as long as some light comes in. And you can always blink, it's okay to blink. And see if this body breathes itself. I'll show you this, see our next picture. So here you can see where people are actually sitting on the floor, and they've got the cushion up, and they sort of sit towards the end of the cushion. They don't sit right up on it, they sit on the end. And when I sort of sit down here, I try and get like a couple of cushions, so I can actually tilt them up. The idea for that is to get your knees down lower than your hips. So this is a funny thing. You'll notice this now when you go and see pictures. If you watch, have a look at yoga sites or people meditating, and see if they're ever sitting like that. That is completely wrong. So today I saw a guy, watched a little clip. This guy was talking about dealing with lower back pain and sitting. And so he's sitting on the ground and his knees are up high and his hips, and he's talking about back pain. That's how you get it, sitting like that. So one time we had a nun here and used to come to our centre. And she must have been able to sort of cross her legs and sit with her bottom flat on the floor. Right? And we sort of said, oh, don't sit like that, don't put a cushion on it. She said, no. This is how I sit. I've done this for years. I know what I'm doing and so forth. Okay. And no kidding, within 4 months her back came out and she couldn't ever come back to a session. She kept her rights for about 3 years, but couldn't ever move out of home. All sorts of things like that until, it takes a long time to recover if your back goes out, your lower back goes out. You do not want that to happen. Anyway, all of us, I just refused to do the distinction. She was like, okay, we'll work to find something. Okay. So I don't want that to happen to you or to me. Now, you'll see that when you actually, some of the times, like this one where it's got the cross, what happens, of course, is you can feel this yourself, like if you're sitting in the chair, just check if you're sort of slumped, right? And then you sort of cramp up your belly. Because if you are, you can't get air down there, so you might have to sort of lift yourself up a bit. If you notice that you can lift yourself up a bit, you should just sort of slump up like that. Yeah, like, sort of slump that, you go like, oh, you'll notice there's this. Now my tummy is sort of flat, and I can breathe. You're quite vivid and aware, but as soon as you go down, turns right like that. Believe me, it doesn't take long before you start getting really tired. You become lethargic, start to shift around in your seat, you can't really get comfortable. It's better if you take some time to, fiddle about. It's okay. You're better off to get the posture right in the meditation and go fine. Now, one of the things, especially, I think it's a really good idea to always think of yourself as a beginner. That way you'll always be open to learning new things. You won't get too arrogant about who you are in the practice. So why I'm saying this is when you meditate, especially in the beginning, do not do long sessions. You just become dull. If you're not good at this, a long session just makes you tired and dull, and that is not what you want to become familiar with. Like I said, you want the mind to be vivid, clear. So do shorter sessions. In fact, probably you want to have the longest for quite some time, maybe 24 minutes, 25 minutes, that's enough. But you'll know within that time you'll do your preliminary prayers, you'll do the dedication at the end, that'll take about a few minutes. So you probably end up maybe just meditating for between 15 and 20 minutes. You do the preliminaries really quickly. And that's better. So, one of those, is there anything you'd like to ask about all I've covered so far? I was just looking at the seats. What the seats, what to sit on, and the posture. No, I don't have that one, but that one might work fine too. I would trial and error. So, the one I've got is just like it's round, it's plastic, it's got all these little ridges on it, because I wanted to have like a massaging for my buttocks. That's what I was about to get. You all know what it feels like, right? So I wanted some massage and things. My mate, he bought from the same firm, a different one. He bought like a wedge with these little ridges on. And then he sits on that and he says, it's really great. I thought, should have bought one of those too just to try them out, But yeah, this other one, we could try it. I tried. It's not a hard and fast rule there. The major thing I think is to be comfortable, to be at ease. If you want to do this, you like it, you feel good. It's a good support to do that, all the better.
I still find I need some support under my ankles.
Yeah.
I can't do it straight up.
No. Yeah, so you find a really simple, good thing to help is a towel. Towels are good. I'd say, even small ones, you just, like I said, just push them under your ankles. Yeah, so like if you're sitting in chairs or even on seats, the most important thing is to make sure that your knees are lower than your hips. Otherwise, you're going to put a lot of stress on your lower back and in your hips, and over time, it'll really do you in. So often I say the most important thing is a straight spine. But if your knees are lower than your hips, it's all sort of natural care. But straight spine, knees lower than the hips. That's what you're looking for. And just play around until you get that to feel smart. When you're sitting on chairs, of course, the idea is to try and get your feet flat on the floor as well. You want to be like quite stable and like, you know, erect, on guard, but relaxed at the same time. So it's not easy. I was going to say, standing seems easy to me. So at least in the standing, you make yourself really tight and then let go, and you just go, you know, it really drops. You get that little thing, that, you know, martial arts and how you stand, if your legs are slightly bent, like that, you're alert, you know? I sort of like that. Then you can be quite deliberate about what you're going to think about that. If you've got a meditation in mind, you know, you're not going to lose track because you're up. That's sort of, yeah, on guard sort of thing, right? Now, there's this great lama in Tibetan world famous. What he's most famous for is teaching a man called Milarepa. And this guy's name is Marpa the Translator. And so here's a quote of his. Which is, even if you combined all the profound oral instructions of Tibet, they could not compare to my system of sitting in the sevenfold posture of Virachana Buddha, Virachana alone. So here's his name, Marpa. This is a Lotsala, meaning he was a translator. Choki Lodro means intelligent one of the Dharma. So he came up with this, well, he didn't come up with it, but he sort of really made this really famous and popular way of sitting. And this is what the posture sort of looks like. You're all familiar with it, you see it up, the Buddha sits like that. It's like what they call the Vajra posture. With the feet are up on each other's things, the hands are like that. And there's a whole lot of other things which I'll talk about. So the first thing is the eyes are fixed on the nose. Right? Like I said, you sit there like it's on the tip of the nose. You're looking there like that. You don't need to force your eyes to do it, it should be sort of light. So his holiness often makes jokes about this too. If he's talking to Westerners, they've got long noses, so he's often grabbing their nose. And, that's the case to watch. Yeah, put your eyes there. So not your eyes not too wide, not too deeply closed. There are types of meditation where the eyes are kept wide open, some like this, others up like that. There's all sorts of different things that produce different effects. It really depends upon the type of meditation you do. In our tradition, because it's lam rim, meaning graduated stages of the path, it's like very lightly opened, looking down towards the nose. This type of meditation is a lot of analysis. So you're sort of thinking, but concentratedly. Eyes fixed on the nose. You see the nose and the navel are aligned. So this is this idea of doing it like this, so you're not like over there or over here. You know, so it keeps you sort of straight. Third, the breathing should be natural. So there are types of meditations where you can breathe 1, 2, 3, 4, hold for 6, exhale for 8, all sorts of different numbering systems for breathing produce different effects. Here, none of that is boring. It's just relaxed breathing, mainly through the nostrils. But there's nothing to sort of, it's okay to do nose, mouth. Or just the nose. So lips and teeth are sort of natural, so they're not pushed up against each other, as I do, like a little gap, you know. And so if you were to breathe in through your mouth, you could. But what's interesting here is that the tongue goes up between the upper teeth. So that's a little bit unnatural, right? You have to sort of get used to that. Just put it up there. Relax. Now the main purpose for doing that is because if you go and start going beyond 24 minutes, suppose you can do all 24 minutes would be great, but you decide to do a longer practice. Well, the longer you go, the more chances there are that you're going to start to drool. So having your tongue up there like that will stop that. It doesn't happen. Shoulders being straight and even. So again, often when you sit, I guess depending upon the instructor, but I have no problems. If you sit there and you get really tight, like pause, you know, stop, adjust your posture. Lift your shoulders up, drop them. Like there's times you just get too tight. And so do something about it, you know, and not sit there like this and pull your shoulders down for a bit. Lift your head back up. And the shoulder things, and then just take your posture. Spine straight, of course, and then you have these legs that are crossed over. So there's a number of important things to do. One is, like I said, make sure your knees are below your hips. You have a straight spine. The other two really important things are the eyes and the breath itself. Now, when you're, again, relaxed and natural. So there is a lot of, we store a lot of tension in the face. And a lot of it is around the eyes and the jaw, with your teeth. But so might be really helpful to do different eye things, like getting the palms of your hands, putting them into your head. You can go online and find all really simple eye exercises, like even rubbing them. When we went on retreat just recently, I bought some this material where you can actually sort of, it's a cream, and you sort of spray it. You close your eyes, you put it on your eyelids, you get a tissue, and then you sort of just wipe it. Then you get up, you get another thing, you drop some drops in your eyes. Man, it makes the most biggest difference. Suddenly your eyes are fresh. Now they're not tired anymore. Which is a big difference to you sitting there. You can find these I just call them hacks. Just the way to try and get everything working as best you can, as quickly as you can, as cheaply as you can. So many years ago, so I don't know, for most of you, you might probably start meditating with your eyes closed. So I was like this for years and years. Then I read something and I just changed my mind completely. I don't have to change. And it was a really simple thing. It's like, you know, so what we meditate, so imagine what we're here, right? We're meditating with our eyes closed. Now, what we're meditating upon is something that we want to become familiar with, isn't it? We're cultivating the mental property. So suppose, so now we're out of here and we're out in the world. You want to call upon this property. Do you close your eyes to do it? No need at all. So just that, I thought, that's right, that's why you've got to keep your eyes open. You keep your eyes open, you want to have these qualities to develop it, but don't require your eyes to be closed. So keep them open. Then we went up, and then Alan Wallace came over. So he's a quite a famous meditator, scholar type person, translator. He came over, went up to Teresa Institute, so I'm going to go up and listen to the start. And we went up, and the process wanted to struggle almost to keep our eyes open. Really? Now, somebody from here was there, and they found it so hard, Bruce, so hard to keep the eyes open. And it is, when you're not used to it, it's like quite a strange thing. But you can get used to it. It doesn't, eyes open even all the time. The only time they actually close is going to sleep and meditating, isn't it? So, try to keep them open. And of course, like the guy that says, you don't, the eyes take in a lot of data every day, so they get tired. And so, you need to find ways to relax the eyes, and of course, the breath. There are different breathing types of meditation you can do to relax the breath. But in the Gurdjieff tradition, and it's with Amrin or graduated stages, it's relaxed. It needs to be natural. In other words, we're not trying to do something different with the eyes or the breath. Why is it possible that Napa considers so great? Why is it the best? So it gives like five reasons. So they say it's really good for developing pliancy. So pliancy is a very sort of relaxed state of body and mind. So you can have mental pliancy and you can have physical pliancy. So how do you know you've got it? Well, you feel really good inside. It's not, it takes a lot to develop it. But once you've got it, then you have what they call calm abiding. So if you have a state of pliancy, and it's required at the upper levels of meditation. Why? Because the mind can easily move to an object, doesn't get tired, and you don't get tired either. But so your body will not become tired, will always feel fresh, and so will the mind. So these postures really lead to that. This state of pliancy. So without pliancy, you can't have emptiness and you won't have karma body either. Pliancy lets you know you're right there. You don't get exhausted. Isn't that great? You don't get tired doing retreat and meditation. But you do in the beginning, that's for sure. And Geshe often said that if you're not tired, you're not working. That's what he was saying, you're resting or sleeping. But after a while, you will do work, but it won't be exhausting for you. But the other thing that says it's uncommon for others, meaning this is the Buddhist meditation. Meaning this is how the Buddhists sit in meditation, 7-point Virachana. Not the case in other traditions, many other ways you can sit. And of course, because the Buddha sat like this, all the great meditators in Tibetan tradition sat like that. Of course, not only like that, because there's plenty of other ways you can sit, especially if you're developing Mahamudra or Zogchen. You sit differently, you use your eyes differently, but those are different meditations. Like I said, again, it's used by the Buddhists. Now, there's a really good book, which I didn't have, up there in my book thing. But what's so great about it is he goes into really great depth of how this posture affects the subtle energy systems. But so each part of the body is working against the reflection, in other words. So what the posture pacifies is putting your hands and legs in that particular posture pacifies what they call jealousy and hatred. So what's been so heavy working on a more subtle level, not so much the mental, but the energies within the body and how they carry these particular ways of thinking that we've got. But as you know, all thoughts have some energy. The energy is called wind. And that energy is associated with the mind that's riding the pulse. So often we talk about our minds being jealous, it's a jealous mind, or the mind of hatred. But that has, these minds have some energy. This energy is called a wind or lung that moves through the body. And if you hold it, put your hands and your legs and feet in all different positions, they don't come up. So gives the mind a sort of neutral place to start from. The legs and hands are pacified by jealousy and hatred. The spine stops the confusion. Especially the more erect you can hold it and relax, the better, because the air just moves straight up and down. If it's not, then it gets sort of caught up. The shoulders, again, pacify the confusion. The head and the neck. So again, I've often found it quite useful to do neck exercises and head stuff before sitting. Like, you know, I don't know, for me, I get a lot of tension in my neck and into the shoulders. But if you're working in front of computers, that's what's going to happen to you. They're going to have to But that's right. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have to break it up a bit, you know. The lips and the teeth, a slight smile causes happiness. But that's like, I often say to people when they're meditating, put a slight smile on your face or imagine you've got one. There are like 40 different muscle groups in the face. That little smile, imagined or real, will relax them all. So 40 muscle groups just changed with the smile. The tongue is to pacify desire. The light comes in, so of course you are awake. And the breath, so the breath is like the eighth number. It's called the seven-point Varachana posture. Sometimes they include the breath as the eighth point. And as you know here, the breath should remain natural. But we're not going to control the breath here. So when I opened the book up, one of the authors there was called Leah Zala, and she was one of the authors of Walking Through Walls. But since then, she's written another book with a different number, I think she's working with. And it's called Concentration and Meditative States Within Tibetan Buddhism. That's what it is. Oh, full of really detailed stuff. It's really great because she's talking to different really high lamas. And they're giving all this information. It's not an easy book to read, that's for sure. But if you can open it up in parts that interest you and go, okay, man, there it is. That book together, Walking Through Walls, you all know about concentration, dark and mental states. Those two books are really, really good.
To say, Andy, that makes a lot of sense about the tongue pacifies desire. You know, babies, like if they're whatever's wrong with them, if you, you know, even if it's your finger, you put it in their mouth, like it pacifies their wanting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because they use their tongue when they suck. I don't know if you know this, but. Babies use their tongue when they like suck on the nipple. They don't, it's not that, it's that.
It's the tongue. Put it behind the tooth for a boy. But now, but the essential point, this is the thing they always highlight, is this idea of the spine. So, it's not easy, is it? It's like, oh, this is going to go like that. You know, lift it up, because otherwise collapsing it through like that. You got to lift it up, then drop your shoulders, but don't drop down. And still try to be relaxed. So people have done martial arts. You probably know how to do this, right? To relax within the body, to be stable, erect, ready, but relaxed at the same time. So again, anything interesting? You think you'd like to ask? I was previous to giving go, oh man, this is so straightforward and simple, what am I going to say? But who knows?
Why is it called the Vairochana posture?
Ah, well, this is the Buddha Vairochana. So Vairochana represents form. So this body is form. Yes, you can see here, so it's influencing what they call the more subtle body, meaning these winds or airs that are inside the body. Literally, in other words, our subtle immune system. You can sit in this particular way, it will contribute to successful meditation. Let's do a meditation. Yep, so. Yes, I just like to sort of rock around, try and move your shoulders a little bit, roll around. So yeah, before we do this, perhaps just rolling the head back, looking up, getting the stretch on the throat. Relax, right? And bring it forward, bringing down, bring your chin down to the chest. And breathing in and breathing out. Lift your head up and just turn towards the left. Look, don't go tight. And move it back around to the center and then over to the right. Again, just move right around, go to the left. Hold there for a couple of seconds. Breathe. And exhale, start turning. Go to the other side. Breathe in. Exhale. Well, exhale now, just look down. You're just stretching up and down, looking down. Breathe again. Move it across to the other side. And again, just look down. Drop the chin into the throat and just look down. We have sort of a different stretch. Lift it up, cover back. Now just sort of gently, and now just lift your shoulders up and down. And now do that shoulder shrug as you see it. Lift both shoulders up and go backwards. Okay, now stop now. Lift it up and go forwards. Now just lift it up high up to your ears. Breathe, just breathe in. And the exhalation, drop them down. Breathe, keep breathing long and naturally. Other things you can do, you want to sort of shake your wrists, put them up a bit like this if you like. Out there, do the flap, flap. Sure. And then this sort of way. You also, if you're sitting there too, you might want to raise one leg up off the floor, put it down, and do the other side. You'll see how you can lift your shirt like that. Just like lift it. Thumbs up. Then sort of work in there, but just drop your like left to one side. Don't do it too tight, just natural or not too far. Come back, other side. So if you feel little creaks and cracks, good, and break them open. In fact, I'd suggest that you, if you're going to be before doing meditation, even just do a few squats, just get the big muscles working. The meditation is so much better if you do a little bit of exercise before doing the meditation. It always does. Feels better, goes better. Okay, so now you take your position. And then adjust yourself and sit in the way you want to. But then slowly, start off with your just chair. Your spine is straight, your head is sitting nicely on your neck. Then your eyes are sort of closed, but a little bit of light coming through, and you're looking down to your nose. And your nose is in line with your navel. And you can place your hands up wherever you like. You can put them in that posture that you saw in the picture with the thumbs that might be touching your thumb. And the right is cradled by the left the palm. Thumbs lightly touching. Make sure you have some air between your so your ribs and your arms. And then just let your body breathe itself. Check the posture and see if you seem to have some sort of an inner stability. Now, so we'll just do, say, 3 or 4 minutes of just breathing like this, and I'm going to ask you to do something and notice the difference, if there is one. So here we're just breathing to gain some sort of stability. Your breathing is natural. Now, if you find yourself so relaxed and you sort of feel like sleeping, perhaps you'll open your eyes a little bit. Now, you might notice that you have more mental clarity. And this is because this posture calms the nervous system. Just having a posture like this frees your mind from managing a physical discomfort. In the same way that a really straight tent pole frees the space inside the tent, and so your straight spine, your relaxed shoulders are doing the same to the body. So for the next 2 minutes, I won't say anything, and then I'll give you the last instruction. I want you to imagine something funny is happening or has recently happened and you've laughed, so you have a smile on your face. So imagine you're laughing or smiling, or actually smile, and then notice the difference. Keep breathing normally and naturally. Your lips are slightly open. Your tongue is behind the top teeth. And this is funny. Breathing in a little bit more forcefully through the nostrils, breathing in. Yeah, let it go. Exhale all the breath. Try to start open. Move your posture all the way. And did you notice what, any difference when you put the smile or imagine? Did you feel anything? So I hope so, because you should be able to discern that. And in fact, you know why the Buddha is smiling. So there's a type of meditation where you can only move from the present state you're in to the next state by smiling. That's how you make the move. The mind. Mind makes the move because you are smiling. Remember that there's a relationship between the body and mind. Well, this one was like to enlightenment. It is very next last stage, and it required a smile. That's how it was done. Now let's look at some of these other ways to meditate. We've looked at these. There's the walking and like the standing one. You know, like yoga, if you do it, it's like mountain pose, isn't it? Yeah. Really, it's a great pose. So a decent, you know, you don't need to do like for long, but it does seem like a long time when you're standing still. You don't like that. Minutes to take hours. Very useful. Now, so we've got the lion pose and the corpse pose. So the lion pose, of course, is lying on the right-hand side, so men and women can do this. It's a good training at night when you, you know, if you sleep alone. It's like, okay, turn on the right side. Now the idea is this is the right, there's a, these channels in the body. For both men and women, lying on the right side gently closes that channel. And this is the key. By blocking the pathway for deluded energies, you create an environment where the mind is less likely to be swept away by fear and confusion. This allows the consciousness to remain stable and clear, and it encourages a more peaceful exit from the body. You try to do this during life, and so at the time of death, it's quite simply just roll over onto your right hand side, pop the nostril. Now, I'm talking about, so this again is a very simple pose you can do before you meditate. It's called the corpse pose. If you've ever done yoga, you'll be familiar with it. So you can see the person is lying on their back, their arms are out like that, their feet just drop out like that. It's complete relaxation, eyes closed, shoulders relaxed. You just sink into the earth like a dead. It's what they call a corpse posture. You do that for, say, 3 or 4 minutes, that'll calm everything down. Then you can get up and then sit on your cushion. I'd suggest before doing that, like I said, I really like the standing up and then doing the mountain and then, you know, getting really tight and then breaking it all. And just, oh. But otherwise you can do it like this. Now there are plenty of ways of learning to relax quickly, of course. But there are many benefits of this posture. So you can see it reduces the nervous and muscular tension, fatigue and insomnia, lowers blood pressure and reduces heart rate, improves memory and concentration, and improves self-confidence and focus. So if you've gone to yoga classes, oftentimes I'll finish with this pose, won't they? It's the last thing people do, you walk up and do the
next. Very good for jet lag.
It's
called the
grounding
pose. Is it? Yeah, it's really
good for jet lag. Wow, I read something else about jet lag too today, I think. Yes. Okay. Now, there are other things you can do, of course. this is a really simple thing to do, right? You just, so this is one thing you can do. You got your arms, you bend your elbows, and just like this. So not only that standing, I'm like that too. I just tighten it up until I do it like that. My arms are in shape, then you stop. Just let it go. Again, it's the same sort of thing. You point out with your legs, tighten everything up. Upper chest and back, and inhale and hold for a count of 10. Lift your shoulders, tilt your neck back. But this one here, the face crunch. So, just take this off and show you. So this is, so you can sit there like that and just put your hands under here and pull sharp. You push up and you open your mouth. Right? So, yeah, you're fine. You're big thing for your face. Just like that, right? Oil. That's right, because you want it all just wake it up. Other things, you can get your thumbs, you push them in under here. Yeah, so that's right, step up. And you can actually roll it too, you know. You feel these muscles under here all really tight. Now, that could be what the people do in the, I go have my massage. They grab the ears and they just pull the acupuncture points on the ears and they just pull their ears like that. They go like that. Yeah, they take a lesson. They take these exercises, take the shortest amount of time. But they can add so much to your meditation and make it much more enjoyable and not so tiring.
Okay. Well, that is
it. Okay. Any questions about this sort of, just kind of like quick fixes, how to get relaxed quickly, how to sort of rejuvenate yourself quickly. But these other simple things also help. Like I said, a glass of water beside you when you meditate, is you can just dip your fingers in with your lips, dip it in through your eyes. And another one just to sort of swirl your mouth just to get it wet. No, it's probably not a problem. You probably need to have a sleep. I don't think that's a problem. I think you need to sleep. And after you sleep, then you can meditate. Yeah. Okay, so let's have a look at our last meditation. So this is about, so I'll talk to you a little bit about it first and then we'll go through. I've got two pictures. There's this one here, and I'll show you the other one, but we'll come back to this one. So the other one is, you can see this idea here. So this black line is what they call the central channel. It sort of runs down just off your spine. That's the black one. And then you've got your nostrils left and right. It comes up like this, like an umbrella goes up, then comes down. And then it feeds into the bottom down here. And this is incredibly important for Ashtanga Tantra practice and so forth, but you can still use it in the sutra methods. Now there's a... so in the book, like Walking Through Walls, like you said, you don't actually, in terms of this meditation, you don't actually need to do it like this, right? So there are two ways of doing it. One is if you do it like for the physical thing. That's when just go, you block one nostril off, you go, you do it one more time, and then you go, okay, now it's this side I block, is it? Yeah, this side, now I breathe it on this side. That's sort of more the physical yoga, but that's quite unnecessary for doing it. So let's do it that way to show, well, this is really simple, isn't it? Just blocking this one off, you block the other one. But when you actually do it, you just do it with your imagination. So you don't actually block off the nostril physically. But you just sort of think, okay, I'm just going to breathe in through this nostril, and it's going to go in, and it's going to go right down, and then come back and hop in the middle. Now, one of the books I think it is Walking Through Walls, but it's obvious that Dalai Lama explains how he does it, and it's a little bit different than what we normally do. So like I said, there's lots of ways of doing this, and I think the best way is to start off as a beginner, make it real simple. And that might be just do this one first, do the actual things. Well, I'll just read out what I've already said, and then we'll do it differently. Just to give you an idea of how he does it. The Dalai Lama uses this mudra to start the meditation. With each hand, place your thumb at the base of your ring finger, then close your hands into fists. Place your fists on your knees with your palms facing downward. So like that, I guess. Inhale and slowly move your hands up along the sides of your torso until you arrive at your chest. Then push your fists out in front of you as you exhale. There we go. Now tuck your right fist under your left armpit. And now you're ready to do the nine-round breathing meditation. Place your left pointing finger against your right nostril. Close your nostril and inhale slowly down the side. Switch, put that finger, put it over there. Yeah, so just do backwards and forwards on that one. Then you exchange and put them down. Then you go the other way. This one. And now you do it like that. There's, like as Geshe Lodro says, practicing this meditation relies not so much on the breath itself as on the imagination of inhalation and exhalation. And this is because you are mainly cleansing your own motivation after making manifest your impure motivation. In other words, we start saying, as soon as we give it our motivation, right? So we say it. And then this kind of saying, yeah, but it's not actually pure yet, is it? But so it's through this breathing. And so that takes out the winds. And now the motivation has been purified. So we use the inner winds that these negative minds ride upon, like aversion and hatred. And that's what we set it up first with our ordinary way of thinking and speaking, and then we clear it up by doing this nine-round breathing meditation.
Eddie, so what does the Swami say for the last three breaths? So the first one is doing it, you know, putting your right hand in your left armpit, second one is doing it the other way.
That's right.
And what's the last one?
Yeah, it doesn't say.
I've seen a video of him where he's taking it through, he's taking a few people through, I think about 20 people in a Gompa.
Doing this meditation.
Doing this exact thing.
Okay.
But he doesn't explain, and I've always wondered what is it that he's imagining. There's even Geshe Zopa video, a couple of videos of him that I've seen, but he doesn't talk about like his visualization.
So when you do these things, like there's like easy way and then more difficult.
I'm more interested in the difficult.
I would say find the easy and then move to the difficult. Over time, I got that, that's fine.
Yeah.
And you find your way. So with the more difficult the visualizations, then you have these visualizations of breathing in all the merits and power and purification, etc., of all the enlightened beings. So when we breathe in, we breathe in there as like white light, and then on the exhalation of one side it'd be red, then black, and then grey. So grey for the ignorance, I think it's red for attachment, I think, and then black for the anger or hatred. So I have that's the sort of visualization here in terms of light. Okay, so let's give this a go. So do it in whatever way you think you can do it. You just want to if you want to make it just like I say, simple, just block off one and go, breathing in the white, breathe out the black. Make all the hatreds go. Breathing in the white, hatred vanishing. Breathing in patience and love. Exhaling anger, resentment, and hatred. Now, from that nostril, it's just been exhaling all the anger, hatred, so breathe up the white light. Exhale the red light, greed, attachment, lust. Breathing the light. That goes red, lust, greed, attachment. Breathing the light. All the lust and hatred and greed are banished. Now, breathing into both nostrils and breathing in the wisdom of all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. Now, on the exhalation, think that we push out the self-grasping mind, the self-cherishing mind. Breathe in the wisdom of the Dhamma Dhatu, breathe in the wisdom, all the wisdoms. White light, and then we exhale. Self-grasping ignorance, the self-cherishing mind. Every form of ignorance vanishes. Last time, breathing in the white energy and the wisdom. That's your eyes. I'm going to bring your attention back to the room. So we've come to the end of our lesson today. Is there anything that you guys would like to ask about what we've talked about tonight, or anything new, if you like? Or is that enough? Is that good enough for tonight?
Practical things are important. Maybe. Like you said, if your body's in pain, you can't meditate properly.
No, that's right.
These practical things are like little. There's a lot of little.
So if we can have a stable and relaxed body, this will really help us create a stable, relaxed mind. In fact, one of those books I'll show you at the beginning. The meditator there sort of comes from the Zen tradition, and there the importance of the posture in that tradition is immense. If you get that right, everything else will be fine, hunky dory. If you don't, there'll be all sorts of difficulties that will come up. But depending upon the tradition, posture is very, very important. That 7-point posture, it balances relaxation and alertness. And the key is this straight spine. Like I said, there are other important things. Always try to make sure the knees are beneath your hips when you sit. And there's a lot of tension stored in the face. So whatever you can do for your eyes and your jaws will make it really, yeah, just like put your jaw down, right?
I was experimenting to see if that did anything.
Yeah, and that's what you want to do. Like, yeah, I do this. I'll pull all sorts of faces and get it really tight and try and move around. Like I said, your face, it's, you know, your eyes, they'll see everything. A lot of stuff goes on. If you can, find a way to relax your eyes and your face, it will do well. So there's some material about this class today, up online. So I'll take the material from FPMT Notes, they're pages 5 to 10. From notes we've put together from our center, pages 4 to 5 and 19 to 20. And then there are some other notes in the LTC NIC extras on 1 and 2 meditation class. So today we sort of really looked at the physical postures, different ways of sitting and so forth. Next week we're going to come back to the mind and be really looking at how the mind uses stabilization meditation and analytical meditation. So a bit more about each of those and how you sort of pull them together and start to mix them. So to say, thank you for being here and stay awake. You will do that. That's good. So that requires energy. So you put energy into it, direct the energy towards the goal that you set at the beginning of this class. So may we be able to develop our wisdom and our compassion. Every other skill we have, through the practices of meditation, then we become familiar with wisdom, compassion, and skillful means. To put an end to our own suffering and develop all of our good qualities, and to help others do the same. So, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, we are quickly attain the state of the Green Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the Supreme Guru or the teacher not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase their reward. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. Our prayer for the long life of His Holiness. We wish greatly, we wish the full endure, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparable kind, thinking that so I beseech, and all the holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, prayer for discovery of Rinpoche's reincarnation. In holding and spreading in these precious and complete teachings for explanation and practice, we wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable error to you. And it's the end of our class, so thank you for being here. We'll see you upstairs.